this earth, but now you've got to play the part.
I want to be a clone.
Be a clone in this conviction, good night. Cloniness is next to godliness.
Okay, so I'm thinking about these lyrics, and it takes me back to a time when you and I used to listen to this guy. Funny song.
Yeah,
like it's a tongue-in-cheek song.
That was a great thing about Steve Taylor.
I want to be a clone. Become a Christian and...
Stamp.
Yeah,
stamp.
Be like everybody else. Man, that's irritating stuff. Dr. Margaret Somerville, I am so happy to have her back. I don't even want to read her bio. I just want to talk to her right away. Dr. Somerville, so good to have you back on the show. How are you?
Thank you, Drew. I'm very well. Thank you.
I'm so glad you're in Canada. What are the odds?
Yeah, I know. I'm only here for about 2 weeks, and you phoned in that time. And as you know, I'm living back in Sydney, Australia now, and I'm professor of bioethics at the medical school at the University of Notre Dame, Australia, which is in Sydney.
Beautiful, beautiful. So what suburb are you in? Let's just get, I want to talk about this first, because I used to live there.
Oh, did you? Well, you'll be surprised. I live in Redfern.
Oh, what?
Yeah, no, everybody freaks out because it used to be like the Harlem of Sydney.
Yeah.
And it was so dangerous that if you got in a cab, I can remember once getting in a cab and saying to the driver, he said, "Where do you go, love?" And I said, "Oh, Redfern." And he looks at his watch. He says, "Oh," he said, "I'm so sorry. I didn't realize it was this late. I can't take you." And he made me get out of the car. He was too scared. No, but now what's happened is, and you know, it's got its downside for some people who don't have a lot of money or they were homeless or that. But now it's a very inner city suburb or area in Sydney, and only 10 minutes walk to the main downtown. And, of course, we're all flocking in there, and I live in an old boot factory that made the boots for the soldiers in World War One.
Wow. Wow. All right. Well, I knew you could put the boots to most topics.
Oh.
So... I have no idea how to say it. Okay, listen, this abortion stuff is the topic of conversation again, and I am I'm a man talking about abortion, and I'm not supposed to because I'm not allowed to, but I'm adopted, so I'm thankful I wasn't aborted, so I think I have a right to maybe say a little something. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't agree that men have got no right to say in what they think about abortion or anything else for that matter. I mean, this claiming of issues to exclude anybody else, I think it's both wrong and dangerous.
Oh.
And abortion's a very, very difficult issue, very difficult. And I have a personal approach to it. I mean, personally, I think abortion is wrong, but it's a very different thing to what you impose on other people. And the way I've approached it, and in fact, I get almost everyone mad at me over this because the pro-choice people don't like it and the pro-life people don't, a lot, not all of them, but quite a few of them don't like it. And the way I approach it is this, that abortion is always an ethical issue. It is not just a nothing thing to do. It's extremely important, and you've got to think about the ethics of what you're doing. I believe that a new human person starts at conception and that they should have some right to protection. But the what you think ethically is not necessarily the same as what you do legally. And personally, I would not have legal restrictions on abortion before probably 11 or 12 weeks. And the reason for that is that the law is not effective to stop abortion. And I think it can even, you know, cause some abortions to occur that wouldn't occur if women felt, you know, that they were able to go and get advice about abortion. And some of them change their minds and decide not to have an abortion. However, after 11 or 12 weeks, I think there should be legal restrictions on abortion. And certainly, after 20 weeks, where the baby is viable, that is, if you delivered it, it's got a chance of living, then I think there should be a very strong prohibition on abortion, the only exception being where it would endanger the life or is a serious risk to the health of the mother. But that's a very rare situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, you know, abortion involves killing the baby and delivering it. But where you could deliver the baby and not kill it, I've written an article about this a long time ago, in 1981, actually, and I called it evacuation and destruction, two separate issues, that even if you give the woman the right to evacuate her uterus, it doesn't necessarily carry the right to have the baby killed. And I think that you would have to give the baby the best chance of living that you could. So it's, you know, it's, and that my approach, it doesn't find full favor with anyone, but it's, I think it's both practical, and I very much emphasize that, you know, to try and get people to consider abortion as a serious ethical issue whenever it occurs. And so I know that you're interested in this Alabama law.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that, you know, they know abortion after a heartbeat, which is about 6 weeks. So that, you know, that's I don't see how you can stop women having an abortion at that time, because all you have to do is get the, for example, RU486, which is an abortion pill. You don't even have to go to a hospital. And so I don't like to have laws that can't be applied, because then what happens? It brings a whole law into disrepute. And if I, you know, if I want strong law after 11 or 12 weeks, then I don't want that brought into disrepute by having an early law that you can't apply.
Okay. Personhood.
Yeah?
That's a phrase that was used in a conversation I had recently, and the context was, well, you know, it's not about whether you think life begins at conception. They're now saying life begins at personhood. When personhood, can you help me understand personhood? Because it kind of seems to me like, oh, someone is a person once they XYZ. Well, what happens when they stop XYZing or Zing? And they're still, you know, they're full grown adult and they stop XYZing.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what's happening, Drew. We actually teach a lot on this to our medical students. And there are two competing views of personhood. One view, the one that I take, is that there is no difference between being a human being and being a person. That is, just if you are a living human being, you are a person. And so I would consider, for example, the fetus to be a person. It's a living human being. There have been court cases, especially in Canada, by the Supreme Court, that said that the fetus was not a person until they'd exited from the body of the mother. I don't agree with that. There is also a view that's been largely promoted by Professor Peter Singer, who is the bioethicist at Princeton. And he takes what is being called a criterial view of personhood. That is, unless you fulfill certain criteria, and they are things like having a sense of your past history, being able to relate to people, being able to think about the future, then you're not a person until you can do that. And at one stage, I don't know what his current thinking on this is, but at one stage, he said you weren't a person until you were 3 years old, because you couldn't do the things that you needed to do to be a person. And also related to this is that there are arguments around among the philosophers that certain animals are persons, for example, whales and dolphins, because they can do some of the things that these people think make you a person. And you see, the other side of that coin is if you get Alzheimer's or you are permanently unconscious, mm-hmm. then you are not a person. Now, why whether you're a person matters is because being a person carries with it certain rights, in particular, a right to life. And so, therefore, if you can say that it's not a person, you could say, well, let's give them a lethal injection. And that's sort of, you know, I mean, actually, that's what happens with abortion, that, you know, the baby's not a person, and you don't want it, you give it a lethal injection.
All right, so what I want to do now, and she doesn't know I'm going to do this, I want to bring our intern over to the microphone. This is Rachel. Rachel's going to slide over to the mic because, well, you don't have to, but I'm pretty sure you're okay with this, because Rachel has been kind of wound up about this conversation, and so wound up that she just dropped her headphones off her head. And Rachel is, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're a woman?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I want to get the facts straight for the listeners. Right, they can't see her.
Right. Okay. No, it makes sense now.
Rachel, if I'm watching your body language during this conversation.
Yeah.
And you've expressed a few times that this has been very frustrating for you.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons, let me put words in your mouth and you correct me, is that ultimately this comes down to a woman's right over her own body for you.
Yeah, of course. And I think there's like certain circumstances that people don't ask to have themselves involved in a pregnancy by any means.
So rape.
Rape.
Example.
And, yeah, okay. Like incest, as they were saying before.
Yep.
And just, so you're just not ready for it, like, at certain stages of your life. I know people personally who have had abortions, and they could never picture their lives, like, with a child now.
Right. So they said, all right, we're going to have an abortion because I'm not ready to have a baby.
Yeah. And also, my problem with it, too, a lot of the time, is the nonchalantness that comes off when these people who are making rules, like in Alabama, are saying that, oh, well, if like rape was inevitable because God wanted it to happen. So
what?
Yeah, no, people are saying this.
But that got the headlines because it's goofy. So we all agree that's
goofy. But it's
goofy.
Just like not taking into consideration the psychological stress that happens after situations like going through rape, and I don't think people are considering.
Yeah, okay, Professor Somerville, go ahead. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think that if there's rape or incest, I think the woman should have a right to have an abortion.
Absolutely.
It should be the woman's decision. Now, whether that woman will decide it's ethical for her to do that, some women decide it isn't. But I think that should be the woman's decision. Similarly, if the woman's life is threatened, of course she should have the right to say she wants an abortion. But the vast majority of abortions don't involve that at all.
Right.
And the other thing that I think we've got to do, it's not enough for us being holier than thou, marching around preaching against abortion. We have to come to the party and give those women a true choice to be able to choose to have that baby, maybe to choose to have it adopted if that's what they want, and to support them, because we know that a lot of the young women, it's because they haven't got the support that they need.
And the education, of proper like contraception methods as well, because that's a huge issue as well. If there wasn't, if there was more education about contraception, then you wouldn't have to have these abortions in the first place happening.
Okay, so let me ask you, you are in your early 20s, so you're part of our Western culture. There's a part of my brain that says, really? Your friends don't know about contraception?
Well, not okay. In Canada, we're a bit more lucky, but in the States, there's a lot of shame that goes into it. And people are still just taught like the basics and not anything about how to, like, preventative measures.
Okay. So the vast majority, and there are numbers out there. I do not have them in front of me, so it sounds like I'm just giving some hyperbole here.
Thanks, Donald. Keep going.
Thank you for comparing me with Donald Trump. But Professor Somerville, I am hearing, I think from you also, that the vast majority of abortions are certainly not because of rape or incest. They are because of inconvenience.
Oh, you know, certainly that happens in some of them. But some of them, they're also because you know, for example, if the woman is abused and she, you know, she really feels she can't cope. And this is why I'm saying we've got to have all the possible support for the woman, for each individual woman. You can't even just generalize.
Right.
You've got to have them so that they've got first of all, that they've got somebody they can trust and confide in and speak to. And we know that when women have that, they some of them, not all of them, change their minds about abortion. I mean, I had a student who was looking for it. She got pregnant accidentally. She had a long-term boyfriend, but the minute he found out she was pregnant, he said, well, I've been meaning to tell you, I'm leaving you. And she was distraught on both counts of being pregnant and him leaving. And she went to she tried to get an appointment with her gynecologist and couldn't. She didn't know who else to go to. So she went to an abortion clinic and they immediately took her in and said, oh, we'll do the abortion now. And she later on came to me and I wrote this story up and she was absolutely distraught. She felt she'd been railroaded into this. And apparently she sort of, while it was proceeding, she started crying and carrying on. And the doctor said, oh, we have to give her more sedatives. She's obviously upset. I mean, that shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
It shouldn't happen. Yeah. And I think we've got to take, if we don't agree with abortion or we want to reduce it to the minimum possible, we have to supply the support that's necessary.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm so glad you said that. And I want to. This is going to sound sensationalistic and, oh, you're doing this because you're on radio, but I would say the same thing to these girls if the mics were not on. Erica, Rachel, honestly, if you ever find yourself pregnant and you are scared and don't know what to do and are thinking that your future is going to collapse because you don't have the support, if that ever becomes a reality in your life, you know that I will support you. You know that.
Yeah.
You know that.
I'm lucky enough to know about birth control.
Yeah, Rachel said I'm lucky enough to know about birth control. Good. Good.
Well done, Drew, but we've got to make sure that not everyone can come to you.
No, that's true. That's true. But I have to I've always said until Jesus people can shut up and provide the support needed to the women that are finding themselves in these situations. Until they can start preaching that, then they need to shut up on the other side.
Yeah, and I think also that we have to try to communicate. I mean, this is where my work is going at the moment. I'm into what I call amazement, wonder, and awe. And if you can see that this is an extraordinary thing, that a new human being has come into existence, and you regard that with amazement and wonder and awe about how it happens, you know, the passing on of human life, I think you've got a chance of, if the woman can feel that she will be persuaded that she doesn't want to have an abortion. We certainly can't force women not to have an abortion. I think that's entirely the wrong approach. But we can support them and we can try to share the wonder of what is involved.
Mm.
And that's sort of what I'm working on now, a much more hopeful, positive approach. And I think we also have to listen to women and their stories, both who've not had an abortion when they had an unwanted pregnancy, and how they feel about it now. I know some of them, and they're so grateful. Like you, Drew, they're grateful that they've got the child that they've got. And I also know some who've had abortions, and they regret it. And there's some who've had abortions and don't regret it. So I think we've got to try to make more people think it's something to be avoided, if at all possible.
Well, Dr. Somerville, you have been one of my all-time favorite guests over the last 16 years. I so much appreciate, you know, in your world, your types can waffle on above the rest of us, and we can't grab on and get it. But you communicate things with your Aussie charm in a way that we can grab on and really get it. So thank you for doing what you do the way you do it. Thank you, Dr. Somerville.
Thank you, Drew, and it's been a great pleasure, too, to get to know you. So keep up the good work. Don't retire from that.
Okay. Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you, Dr. Somerville. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. I got to stop saying bye-bye. I sound like a flight attendant.
It's all right.
Bye-bye.
Your head's in the clouds.
I do remember sitting across the table from a friend talking about the subject of abortion, and she disagreed with me, and but you know, we're still friends, and that's good. But I remember the one point, I think it's wrong to try to always look for the closer, you know? Ooh, that one point that gets you.
Ooh, mic drop.
Because it's not that kind of an issue. But I explained to her that another friend of mine, that this friend's daughter was pregnant, and she was murdered. And the baby was murdered along with it. And I asked about what the sentencing should be. Should it be for one or two murders? And the girl said, oh, yeah, I kind of see your point.
Yeah. I don't know if we did talk about it. I had to step out for a moment. The other thing that drives me nuts about all of this is the father's part. Where's he in all of this? And I don't necessarily mean that he has to have an opinion, but that example that was brought up about, you know, the boyfriend who bailed once she mm-hmm. found out she was mm-hmm. pregnant.
Yeah.
Like... That's another graying issue here as well, because he is just as responsible for this. And when they bail, like...
Yeah, it's not cool.
And then we start pointing fingers at the girl. Like, that's... Yeah. Anyways.